Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to the Ski or Die podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Montevan.
And I'm Stevie Island.
And Stevie made it weird last time, so I'm taking over the intro again. but yeah, we're back. We're here to talk about something super personal to any skier who's ever experienced it. We both experienced it, so I'm going to do our best to keep it objective, but also get in our feels a little bit. And that is the topic of being in a slump, right? We've all been there. We feel like we're doing the same thing over and over again and not getting the result we want. We're doing something we have done that's worked for us and now it's not working. Nothing is working. Maybe you've changed everything. Maybe you've changed nothing because you're trying to find your baseline again, but your baseline isn't working, right? There's so many different symptoms, if you will, of a slump. And Stevie, I'll kind of, at some point, I want you to explain what a slump feels like to you because we've all been there. And, you know, for me, a slump feels like when I can't find anything that feels like me, even like when I'm working on my old cues and running my numbers, my equipment, like everything's right. And it's like just not working over and over and over again. Or when I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and it's not working, I'm not getting the results. And I know that you've got some strong feelings about slumps. I know that you have had a brief one this summer, and that's from you. That's not me judging you. but you did something that I think was really impressive this summer, and I just want to give you credit for that in an attempt to get out of your slump. Slumps are it's very tempting to quit when you're that frustrated. And when we were in Europe, after we skied Bodaski in Spain, and then we skied the Monaco Cup, and we went to Bordeaux to ski Lacanau. We both had just come off of 3 hours of sleep and a flight, and we only had that day to practice. We had to compete the next day. So, like, a lot of factors there. But you didn't really like the first two events, how you skied. And in practice at Lacanau, you were not thrilled either. And to the point where you were like, I might just not ski the event. And what I want to make clear here is that something we learned in going to these events is that once you're there, you're there. So if you have a tournament you don't like, there is no go home and get a few sets and find your baseline again. It's on to the next pro event, on to the next practice set for four passes behind a boat and a driver you've never skied before in a new foreign country. There is no go home and figure it out. Once you're in it, you're in it. And so after having two events and a practice that you're like, this is not it, you could have quit, but you didn't. You actually did something a little unorthodox, something that takes kind of a lot of balls, and maybe some people would say is ill-advised, but you tried a new ski, took another practice set on a new ski, the ski you're on now, which is a good, and skied the event on the brand new ski. And I think that really speaks to your willingness to overcome the slump, because anybody else would have quit, and you kept trying to find a way, and I think you always will try to find a way. So I don't want to dig into it too deep, but I wanted to make sure our listeners had some context before you started talking about how it feels to you as somebody who has watched all of this go down. And I think this really speaks to another point we've talked about a lot, about the value of essentially getting your ass handed to you at pro events on the big stage. Like, there is value in that, and I've kind of monologued, so maybe I'll let you take it away there about you need to get your ass handed to you.
Yeah, well, when I first entered the Pro Tour, you know, I wasn't necessarily an elite skier, I wouldn't call myself. You know, I was just starting to run 38s, running mid-39, and I ended up just signing up for events. You know, I wanted to support you, one, to be there for you, but I also wanted to get wet while I was there. And I think a lot of people don't do that because they want to try and get ready for the event. They want to try and get to a point where they could compete before they sign up for pro events. But for me, like, I think the only reason I was able to get to the level I am is because I started showing up to these events so early. And that's why I had such a rapid,
ascent?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. Whatever, you know, of my average, I started skiing a lot better year over year. And I think it's because of that. Because I always say I learned so much more at pro events than in training. So much more.
100%.
Yeah, like, you just learn a ton, right? Mm-hmm. You're around the best. You're getting what you're going to be getting in the big events, the straight driving and the, you know, just everything, the camera in your face, and the everything is just risen to the next level when you're skiing these big events, and you learn so much. So I want to just premise it with that. And so I'm not afraid to just suck at events. It's really what I'm trying to get at. It's like, I'm not afraid to just look like an idiot. I'm not afraid to change shit. And I always get so much shit when I change. I change everything. It's because I ski with Chet, and I've been skiing with Chet since I was 8, and he's really into change too. It's like, I want to get to the next evolution. I want to find the next thing. I want to see what works best, and I'm not afraid to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't want to be stuck doing the same thing over and over again. That's the last thing I want to do. I'm always trying to get better. So just premise it with that. Coming to this spring, I was skiing really good. I was, you know, probably, I was running 4:41 behind Wim, behind everyone. I was running 3:41 behind Becky very regularly, you know, straight driving. I was having a really good spring. I'm like, I'm going to kick ass this year, you know. I started hyping myself up a little bit. I was like, man, this is going to be my year. Mm-hmm. Last year, you know, I made my first pro final. Like, this is the next step. I'm just gonna run 39s. I'm gonna smoke 39s this year. And then the water warmed up a little bit, and all of a sudden I just started skiing terribly. And then all of a sudden, boom, tournaments were on me.
Yeah.
In April, I had a record tournament. I skied terribly. I was switching skis left and right. You know, KLP was helping me. He was super patient with me, thank God. And I started just getting punched in the mouth. Like, basically, I went into scramble mode because May came up, and all of a sudden the LCQs were here. And I was just missing 39. And I just didn't know what to do. Because I was like, holy shit, I went from like running 4:41 to missing 39. Now I can't run 39. Not only can I not run 39, I can't even get past three ball 39.
Yeah.
Which was terrifying for me. And my confidence got destroyed in May. Because LCQ, I ran 139. And the 139 I ran, they cut my gate. So it's like...
And LCQs are brutal. Like, I just want to, you know, say, like, what people don't realize about LCQs is, like, the format of that tournament... It's not about, let's try to get as many skiers qualified as possible. This is going to be extremely hard. It is the straightest driving. It is the most perfect by the book tournament because it's an elimination tournament. It's not a, let's make sure so-and-so gets qualified. It's a, if you aren't good enough, you're not going to make it. Bye-bye. Thanks for your entry fee. Go home. And the LCQs are hard. It's always hard to start the year off with LCQs. I just want to say that because you're going to get sucker punched so hard at least one round of an LCQ because it is that by the book to the T. It is an elimination tournament. And so to go what you're going through and then have to do it through an LCQ, I mean, I'm glad you stuck, like you hung in there, right? Because you probably learned something that you're going to tell us about, but it is so gut-wrenching.
Yeah, I mean, it was so mentally challenging. So I just learned a lot about myself, about my own character, and what I needed to do to get better as just a man in general, because it was so hard for me. I wanted to be a child about it, you know? I wanted to be like, this is unfair. What the fuck is this? You know, and blame all the externalities.
Break the ski over a tree.
It's so frustrating. It's just like I put so much into this, and now I'm just getting these shit results.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you're just training day after day, all year, for 3 years, and all through the winter. And, you know, you set this expectation for yourself, and you don't meet it. And you're trying as hard as you can. It's the most frustrating feeling on earth. I didn't know what to do with myself. And
I think what's even more frustrating is, like, you weren't coming from a place of, like, delusion. You were skiing. You were doing benchmark sets off of Becky, off of Jeff, off of Wim, which, like, textbook straight driving. And if you're skiing good off them, everything should be good to go, right? So, like, new word for everybody, according to TikTok, delulu. Like, if you're delulu, it means you're being delusional. So, like, my delulu moment, right? Okay, so yeah. New vocab for everybody, delulu. So you weren't being delulu, like...
Well, yeah, and I had been running 39... Last year in pro events, I ran 2.3s.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I had it in me.
So I'm just saying that makes it hard. It wasn't like you were just skiing off me and I was weaving for you, so you thought you were a big man and then you went to a tournament and got, you know.
Well, that's already happened to me. That's another podcast episode. But yeah, I mean, I looked in the mirror and I learned so much about myself, and I figured out that I was just doing these peaks and valleys, and I was letting the ski results get to me. And so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna humble myself, and I don't care about the scores, and I'm just gonna try and rewrite, you know, my skiing and figure it out. And then that didn't work. And then I just did the, I don't know. I just tried everything, it felt like, to get better, and I wasn't getting better. And sometimes it takes major change in your life to kind of stoke the fire and make progress. And that's what it took for me. And so that's why I switched back. And that's why I did that, you know, kind of aggressive thing, which is changing skis in the middle of a European tour. Yeah. You know, I might get flack for it, but I think that's the best thing. That was the best thing for me in the moment.
You did get flack for it.
Yeah, of course. I get flack for everything, but whatever. And I just, I don't know. Now I'm just committed.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So when you speak about the peaks and the valleys, because that's not the first time I've heard that analogy in sport. So you guys know I work in sports now, talking to some professional track athletes, runners, and they say you don't want highs and lows when you're training at like the Olympic track level. You don't want to have like really great days because you'll have really bad days. Mm-hmm. You want to ride the middle.
Yeah.
For as often as you can.
Yeah.
Because if there's a high, there has to be a low, and the lows like aren't worth it. And that's crazy because in skiing, you fail more often than not.
Yeah, I mean, it's so proper for water skiing. You cannot get too focused on those PBs. Like, you're just, I don't know how long the slump's gonna last. I still could be in the slump. You know what I mean? Am I okay with riding through it and just continuing to ski, or am I just gonna quit? I mean, I can quit. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that, you know, and maybe the verbiage, like, you would tweak slightly, but to me, it's like you're not in a rut. Like, I see people in a rut doing, like, banging their head against the wall, doing the same thing over and over again, refusing to change anything, but not liking their result. Like, to me, that's more of, like, a rut. Like, mm-hmm. That's where you're going to stay. I think slump implies it's not working, but I'm trying everything. At least that's how we're kind of defining it for the sake of this podcast here.
Yeah.
And I think that is a better place to be, mm-hmm. is like that place of willingness.
Yeah, I agree. I think you need to be willing to change, and I think you need to be willing to change with a good attitude. I think for me, like, changing my attitude and humbling myself and saying, you know, no one cares around me who cares that much about my score. I care a lot, but no one around me really cares that as much as I do. And so I just need to recognize that, and I need to bring value to the situation by keeping my chin up. And although I'm internally having extreme frustrations, like, just being a pleasant person to be around, and that will lead to long-term success, because I personally, when I ski my best, is I'm relaxed and I'm having fun. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna do a podcast episode on that right. Next with the, you know, do you psych yourself up for events or not, and learning how to get into the flow state and all that. I reach that level of like competence and focus and flow when I have no internal frustrations, and I have a good attitude going into the day, and everyone around me is like content. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's when I ski my best, is when we're just having fun and relaxed and focused and really trying to ski well and at a high level. But it's just not when I get frustrated and pumped. Like in Monaco, like, I remember the second set, I don't even remember this, but I was listening to the hardcore rock. I was just like, oh, you know, I had such a good 38 in the first round. Like, I'm just going to rip this 39. I'm just going to go as hard as I can. You know, I'm going to go as hard as I can. I'm going to fucking psych myself up. I'm so fucking psyched right now. I'm like, ugh. Like, I was like macho.
Oh, I remember.
Testosterone maxed out. And that was me trying something new.
Yep.
I had never done that before, especially a pro event. And did not work at all.
Scare the shit out of the poor Monikin fans. Is it Monikin?
I was pumped up, man. I was pissed off. And I skied like shit. I skied terribly.
You breezed through something that is really powerful, though. You said that nobody really cares about how you ski. And hang in here with me, because I know that sounds terrible, but it's really liberating. You know, when you go to the lake and you practice, or if you do ski in tournaments, you have to remember the people there really only care about how they ski. They will comment on your skiing. People will say dumb stuff. Usually they're projecting how they feel onto you. They're externalizing. Some people just like verbally vomit at tournaments, like whatever. But really, even in a tournament, it's so freeing because you're really the only one who cares about your skiing. So you might as well do what you want with your skiing the way you want, because really nobody cares. And I see so many people not really even begin to tap into their own potential tournament skiers at least, because they are on the starting dock when they're putting their boot on, they are so wrapped up in what certain individuals think about them.
For sure.
And you there's just, no doubt. You can't get where you want to go. You only have so much brain capacity, right?
I think some people don't even ski tournaments because of that feeling.
I think some people ski practice and hide and go to back lakes and come out when nobody else is out because of that.
Yeah.
And
it can be crippling.
Because if you only have, you know, brain capacity is 100% and you're using up 75% of it about what is so-and-so going to think of me. I mean, probably one of my better traits is I genuinely just don't give a shit.
Well, and that anxiety is at its highest. It peaks when you're skiing poorly.
Of course.
Or you're skiing under what is expected of you. Mm-hmm. Because people do comment like, oh, you're like, what happened? You're not running the same buoy count, blah, 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 blah. It just happens. And I don't think there's like malice in when people ask you about those things, but that stuff hurts, man.
It stings.
Yeah. And it makes you so self-conscious and you just have to get past it. And I struggled with that this year real bad. I couldn't draw it up worse for me this year.
Last year, and I know mine was a result of injury, but last year was definitely like a slump for me. And you're right, those comments sting. I mean, the number of times people said to me, or on a webcast, you know, she doesn't really look like herself. She doesn't look good right now. I am well aware. Thank you. Trying my best to get past it. And it's hard. I mean, I fought and fought and fought, and I did try to quit. Thank God I had Chet and you who talked me out of it every time I tried to quit, because it was so hard to be in that slump. Nothing felt right and normal. I had injury issues, so like my body didn't feel right. That like mind muscle awareness was wacky. So different situation, but still a slump nonetheless. And I feel like this year I really had to humble myself coming into it, because sure, my arm is better, and sure, my head is better, and my neck is better, and my rib is better, but was I ever going to be good?
I'm not sure I understand.
That's why we're talking about it. Sorry, Siri chimed in. Was I ever going to be good again? You know, I went how many months without running a 38 after my crash? I mean, I couldn't run a 38 off, and that's just mandatory in open women's slalom. So for me, I had to humble myself this year. I know I can run deep 39. There was the 39 in April of last year that I should have ran it. It was that 20 mile an hour head crosswind in the Oakley tournament. It was wild, but I had a great start. And I was like, oh man, like I'm going to have a good year. Just like you. I'm going to come out swinging. I'm going to kick ass this year. And then I got hurt. And this year, my focus has been less about I want to get really far down the line at 39. I want to run 38s. I want to run them better. I want quality. I want to, you know, turn two ball at 39 and know what coming into three ball looks like. If I can learn that, then I can learn what coming into four looks like. And so, you know, of course I want to run it, and there's girls who are running it, and I want to be there. Like, I want to hang out with you guys so bad, but I've had to humble myself and be like, nope, you got to learn how to turn three. And then you'll have to learn how to turn four. And you don't deserve to run it until you've learned how to run it.
Yeah. For me, it's been falling in love with the process again. It was tricky because I fell out of love with it. You know, I basically got to the point where I hated it. I didn't want to ski. I didn't want to show up and ski because I knew I wasn't as good as I used to be. And as silly as that sounds, like that's just, it became so painful to like cut the rope to 39 and know I wasn't going to run it. Whereas before I knew I was going to run it. I expected to run it. It became like a 38. But now when I cut to 39, I'm like, you know, I just had to fall in love with the process of like, I had to go back to Stevie 2 years ago before I ran 39 at a tournament, and I'm there again, and I just have to be okay with that. That's hard.
You know, we've been skiing a little bit with Nick Adams, and we've liked his coaching up at Hobe, and he said something the other day that was really interesting. He mentioned Rip Curl. They had a campaign a while ago called The Search, and I don't surf, so like, I hope I don't do any disservice to surf culture, but it was the idea that surfers are always on the search for like the next wave, like the next good thing, as opposed to I have the result right now. And I think it's kind of like the process, right? And he said, I think you ski your best. I think Stevie skis his best, like when you guys are always in the search. And he said that's really hard, a really hard mindset for most skiers, high level and like intermediate level even, to stay in at their hardest line lengths.
Hmm, yeah.
And he said, you know, if you talk about open men, like Freddie, Will, Nate, they're the best at staying in the search at 41 right now in tournaments. They don't let the anxiety get to them, the pressure. So, you know, if it's hard to do for what we would call the best of the best right now, it's going to be hard to do for anybody. But it is important. It is foundational in getting out of your slump.
Yeah, like if I don't have a new thing I'm working on that's exciting, skiing is just a drag. I have to have something that's like new and exciting and fun. And that's why I love working with Chet, because he's master at that.
Yes.
He always has something new and exciting and fun to work on.
Yes.
And so that's instrumental to me.
It's never the same thing over and over again. I love that about his coaching.
Yeah, and it's less about buoys and more about let's learn how to be better today.
Right.
You know, I've had days where I just run 38s, and those are like more fun than the days when I'm like trying to go as deep as I can at 41, and I'm like, ooh, you know, chasing the buoys. So yeah, it's been a really tough year for me, and it's been hard to talk about with people. It's hard to talk about here on the podcast, but you know, working through it has taught me so much about me and my life as a person, as a man, as a skier, as a husband, even.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, when you have these tough times, and it's privileged of me to even say it's tough times. I'm just not skiing that good. Like, my life is pretty damn good. Like,
right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like, I have a job, I have a house, I have a wife, I have a life, I have, you know, I can ski every day and work out and friends and all that shit.
But about when you get into a slump in other areas of your life that do affect your quality of life?
Exactly. Like, that's what it's carryover, right? And that's, you know, skiing teaches you so much about life. And I think that's part of the reason why I love it so much, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sport in general, right? Like, how important are sports in education?
Oh,
like, so you know what I mean? Like, if kids join sports at a young age, they just learn so much about life.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, it's instrumental in youth development.
There's tons of studies about employees who are former athletes, like college athletes, their critical thinking skills, their leadership skills, productivity, you know, their assertive nature. Sport is important and we learn a lot from it. And I think that there's lots of elements of this conversation about being in a slump in skiing that you could take to your marriage, your friendships, your hobbies, your health and nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, take the peaks and valleys out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they say that about drug addicts too, right? Like, in alcoholics. Because when you're addicted to something, you're addicted to that peak.
Right.
Right? And then the second you're off it, you're in a valley. And you have to level the playing field for yourself and just not be chasing those peaks. And then all of a sudden, you start really low, right? But it's a straighter line.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, if you're able to stick with it, you can raise that and the level is increased and it still averages out. Raise the straight line. And yeah, and then you're getting closer to that valley, but it's much more straight. Or sorry, closer to the peak, but it's much more straight line and it's less of a peaks and valley situation.
Right.
I feel like, yeah, this is so much carryover. I agree with you.
Well, I have to really give you credit. It's hard to talk about this, especially when you're still in the middle of it. But, you know, if you'd waited till maybe you were out of the slump, however you define that, I don't know that you'd be able to have shared so much of, like, the raw side of this that hopefully helps people. Because once you get past it, you start to look at it through rose-colored glass, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, speaking about my injury is so easy now, but 8 months ago, I mean, I know I was in a bad place. I don't remember it that well because I've tried to move on so hard.
Yeah.
You had to live with me, so you probably could speak to it better. But, you know, in hindsight, it's so easy to talk about.
Well, yeah, you're just trying to survive, you know, day to day, and, yeah, you just get lost in it.
Yeah.
So
I really have to give you credit for talking about it now and getting back to the process. Seems to be the solution for a lot of things in life, man.
Yeah, no doubt. That's been tricky. But thank you for your support.
Always.
That's been instrumental.
Always. I mean, hey, you're always willing to try. I'm always willing to try for you, man. We'll find a way. There is an endless amount of combinations of things we can try in skiing. And that's what's cool. It's what also drives us crazy.
Yeah.
you know, but
you can't be willing to change, you know, or you have to be willing to change. Sorry.
Yeah, I have to be willing to change. I think there's a lot of people who show up to the lake and know they're not going to ski as good as they used to. And for whatever age, maybe it's age, maybe it's injury, maybe it's frequency of skiing, like whatever, that is your reality right now. And can't let it drag you to the depths. Can't let it drag you down to the valley.
Yeah. And one thing, you know, I'd like to touch on too is that comparison can be the thief of joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're comparing yourself to your competition, you know, I remember something my dad told me when I was really young, and at first it shocked me. He said, there's always going to be someone better than you. And I was like, what the hell? You're my dad. You're supposed to tell me I'm the best. But that stuck with me, man, through the decades. Like, honestly, it's so true.
Right.
You know, there's always going to be someone better than you. And it's, I think he was in that moment specifically talking about music, maybe. I don't remember. But yeah, like, I'm never going to be the best guitarist. There's always going to be someone better than me. There's always going to be someone who's you can look at and say, I wish I had that. Oh, I wish I had this. I wish I had that. And you can get too deep in that, and it can, you know, just drain you of your joy and drain you of your love for the sport even.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, if you, you know, want to be Nate Smith, you know, and you look at him and you want this, you want that, that can fuck you up, I think.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope. I mean, I definitely got a version of that from my mom. A little bit different. She said, You can have anything you want in the world, but you have to pick something. You're going to have to be the best at it, which means you're going to have to work harder than everybody else. And I think she was talking more career advice. Like, if you want to name your price, you can only do that if you're the best in the world.
Hmm.
But she always tied it to you're going to have to work really hard.
You know what I said to myself when... I love that, by the way. But you know what I said to myself when we first started dating?
What?
I said... I can just run 3:39. I can make it on the pro tour, and I could go to all these cool tournaments with Elizabeth. That'd be so cool. That's all I even want. I don't even care if I get more buoys than that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And now I'm like, holy shit, like, I got 2.5 at 39 at Nationals. I fucking hate myself. When then, if I ran 2.5 at 39 at Nationals, I would have like won men's one or whatever, and I would have been so stoked.
It's all perspective. The other day, we skied at Hove, and I did a 32 start, which if you follow me on Instagram, you know that's newer to me. I did my first tournament 32 start at Nationals, and I'm still really learning that. That's just a different, you can do a whole episode on starting at a shorter line length than what you're used to. But I'm, you know, pushing myself. I 32, 35, I ran back-to-back 38s, and I think I ran like a 4 at 39, and I was pissed I didn't run the 39 because it was a good enough start, you know? And I forget what else I did at 39. It was a good set. But I was like pissed because I'm like, I didn't run a 39. I think I got to 5 was like my max. And I was just like, shit. And Megan's driving is like really good. Like that felt very like reality. And I was like, oh my God, Elizabeth, like 6 months ago, you would have killed to start at 32 off, run 2:38s, head tail, and then like get midway through 39 a handful of times. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God, you know, have a little gratitude, have a little perspective.
Yeah, I think you have to celebrate the small victories.
Yeah.
But and people say that a lot in the sport, but they don't talk about when you have taken a couple steps backwards and you're kind of ascending from there,
mm-hmm.
that you have to celebrate those victories too. Not like, it's not linear.
Well,
I mean.
Really good point. Now that you brought it up, and it just kind of came full circle in my brain. So, coworker, very good friend of mine, Kara Winger, just a month ago, went from being number one javelin thrower in the world to number two. She's still number two, and she hasn't thrown in a
Brutal.
Long time because she just retired.
She retired, now she's number two. So
four-time
so
Olympian.
So sad for her.
Oh, my God. I mean, just incredible woman. I'm so honored to know her and be able to bounce my skiing off of her, which there's a lot of similarities between water skiing and javelin, but that's like a whole other thing. She is always reminding me how much you have to celebrate the little things that might not make sense to other people because it's the only way to get out of this like alive. And in skiing, we are so hung up on the PB,
yeah.
which are far and few between.
Yeah.
If you don't PB, your life is over.
Yeah, like you're pissed if you don't PB.
It is the end of the goddamn world.
Yeah.
Okay, well, like, what's your average, though? Did you run close to your average? That's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Did you...
Well, it also depends on if we go to a really hard site, you know what I mean?
Right. What did you run? Like, what was your tailwind pass? Like, did you run your hard pass
wind.
And then a tailwind? Right.
Yeah.
We do a very bad job of celebrating the little wins relative to the circumstances.
This is true.
You know what I mean? Like,
the doom and gloom is real, man.
If you go to Moomba and you don't PB and you're like, I should quit, I'm sorry, but like, get your head out of your ass, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So I wish in this sport, if I could have one wish for Christmas, Santa baby.
What?
Yeah, it's not even close to December. Whatever. One wish for water skiing is that everybody would get better at celebrating the little wins and not feeling like you have to justify to everybody around you why that's a win for you.
Yeah.
It's a win. You can just say that it is.
Yeah.
And if people don't get it, too bad. They probably need a win themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't given themselves permission to celebrate the little wins.
And that doesn't mean, like, I feel like sometimes people see someone who didn't ski well still celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they see that as like a weakness. Like, oh, they're just not trying to get better.
Right.
What's up with that?
You don't know what somebody's going through.
Right.
You know? Who is it? Adam Caldwell, he had pneumonia, right? He was in the hospital. And I think it affected his lung capacity. And that made it harder to get back into skiing once he did, which thank God he's out of the hospital and he's like all is well. But like, for him, being able to ski a whole set, I'm sure at the time, once he did, felt like a huge win.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and that's what I'm talking about, is like, you have to make it relative. And sure, open men could have, like, laughed at him, but I know they didn't.
Yeah.
Because they all know they take away some of their lung capacity, everything changes.
Yeah. So there has to be a shift in perspective.
Yeah.
When you have these slumps, right? There has to be. Because otherwise, you'll just doom and gloom your way to the bottom of a pit.
When you're in a slump, it's not realistic to shoot for a big win. But you could shoot for a handful of little ones.
So you have to make that shift in perspective. But the only way you're going to be able to do that is also if you shift your attitude. And shifting an attitude has to be a daily practice. And something I started doing was keeping a journal. And like, whether or not I wrote into that day, I always wrote down like what attitude I wanted to have.
Mm.
So like, I write in like humility every day. Like, no matter what, I write in like humility and like never complain. And that's like, I write that every day, no matter what I do. And whether or not I write it or whatever. Every morning. And I just, after 2 months of doing that, I feel like it's just shifted my brain. Like, it's like, every time I feel like being an asshole and being self-centered around my skiing and thinking, like, I suck, whatever, 339 sucks, whatever. I think about that and I'm like, okay, no, that's not important. What's important is keeping my head on straight. And that shift in perspective is really important, and that's what's helped me this year
mm-hmm.
when I haven't skied well. So just something to think about.
You know, I guess I never correlated this before, but I don't remember when I bought my prompted journal. I don't know if that was March or April. I think maybe February, I'm not sure, but in the spring. And I was still trying to overcome like my injury situation. Like I was on old points, we were trying different skis. Of course, like, the water's cold, everything's cold, like trying my best, wasn't sure if I was ever going to be, you know, by my definition, any good again. And I've never been much into talking therapy, but I do like writing things out. I'm a writer. And so I got into prompted journaling, and I picked one, ordered it. And every day I started just answering the prompt about like whatever came to mind, not overthinking it. And every time I did it, it always felt like a huge weight off of my shoulders. Even if the prompt wasn't something that I felt like I needed to talk about that day, apparently I did.
Yeah.
And I would finish every entry with, I am so lucky everything works out for me. And I think I journaled consistently for like at least a month, if not more, straight. And the rate at which my skiing got better during that time, I can't explain it exactly, right? Like, I can't say, you know, this caused this. But I think that taking that mental load off just via the prompts in the journal, tell me, it'd be things like, tell me about a time that you felt misunderstood. write it out, and then I would say, I'm so lucky, everything works out for me. But I wrote that phrase every day for, like, let's say a month, if not more, and everything started working out for me. But it's that perspective.
Manifestation.
It's whatever you are looking for, you will find. Yeah. What's that old saying? If you are driving and you're looking for red cars, you're going to see a ton of red cars.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for blue cars, you're going to see a ton of blue cars.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was looking for everything to work out for me. Didn't have to be knocking out of the park, right? Didn't have to be a PB.
Yeah.
But things working out for me, those were like little wins that added up. And I really like that you brought the power of writing things down, as short as they might be.
Yeah, because I needed help, man, to get to the place where I could have control of my attitude. Mm-hmm. I don't have control over my skiing. I stopped being able to control my skiing, basically. I stopped being able to ski well. And I lost control. And so when I lost control, then I spiraled. It's like, okay, now I need to grasp what I can't control. And that's my attitude and my just character in general and how I viewed myself. I can control those things.
Do you think there's like a lack of conversation about adult men controlling their attitude?
Maybe, I don't know. Like, around what?
I feel like women are like much more willing to be open about the idea of like, okay, manifesting, or I'm going to rebrand myself. Like, there's a lot of names for it, right?
Right.
Where women will be more open about what they're looking for in their life and what they're going to change. And like usually like, okay, where is it coming from? Well, they don't like their current emotional state, like their attitude, and they mm-hmm. want to change that. But I don't really see a lot of men talking about it. I know men do it. We see men level up all the time, mm-hmm. but I think that men aren't as comfortable sharing the how to. And so when you say like you knew you needed to get a hold on your attitude again, as a man, like, what does it feel like when you don't versus you do?
It was embarrassing to talk about. That's why we don't talk about it.
Oh, well, okay, I answered that.
It's just embarrassing to, as a man, I think you're less willing to be vulnerable mm-hmm. in those types of conversations. Being vulnerable in the fact that you're looking at yourself and you're externalizing your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like just instinctually, we're not wired to do that. We're wired to express strength as a man. That's our, that's what we instinctually want to express to the world, if yeah. that makes sense.
Totally.
Because that's just like how we're wired. Mm-hmm. Because if you express weakness, that is not good for you. Because if you're a pack mentality, like you're in the pack, if you want to have people think that you're strong so that you're valuable to the pack and you don't get kicked out. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to, you know, caveman days. That's how it is. So our human biology is written that way.
When your attitude is awry, which does make you weak, so now you're like in this double negative place, right? Like
yeah.
you are weak, you don't want to be weak, but it's because your attitude is awry, which also makes you feel weak that it went awry. Like
yeah.
how do you get back to that place of strength for any men who might struggle with attitude?
Well, self-awareness is the first step, as always. And when you have the self-awareness, then you get humbled by a moment of weakness. And when you have those moments of weakness, that's your flare, your warning sign to say, I need to look in the mirror. And usually it happens in private. You just have these moments of self-reconciliation, and you dedicate time to it and self-awareness of it and consciousness to it. So I think that's how it progresses. But I think it sparks from moments of immaturity that embarrass you as a man. That's really what it takes.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think that's a cool topic. Maybe we should talk about that more in depth sometime. But, I mean, we see it in skiing.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes skiing brings it out in you.
It
brings out the worst in us, because we're at this, like, hyper-anxious state, and we're extremely vulnerable because, like, we're the only ones in the water. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's just all that right there is what's going to bring it out of you. And that's why you see people break their skis on the shore and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's happened to the best of us, and it's just how it goes. But I think if you're able to be self-aware in those moments, and you're able to kind of, bring yourself to, recognizing that you need to change and then you could start to change and get better in the process.
And we're going to do a really cool episode, hopefully really cool, on that anxious state in tournaments that you're talking about, and hopefully give you guys some things to think about and how you want to prime yourself for next tournament season if you are a tournament skier. But it's something you could really take to anything that's performance related, anything you want to do well at. You know, that anxious state we all fall into right before. Anybody who says they don't have anxiety about performing is a liar. But there are things you can do, should do, and things you should not do. So we'll be talking about that, which I think will tie in really nicely to this conversation. But I want to say thank you for sharing about the slump you're in. I know it's hard. And I think you're in a good place. And not where you want to be yet, but you're on the way to that more straight line in a more elevated place.
Thank you. I'm trying.
We know. cool. Well, any final thoughts? I know that was kind of very near and dear to your heart, and I don't want to steal it from you.
No, I mean, I think we pretty much touched everything. I just, you know, I don't know. There's a life I want to live, and it's just not one that's full of despair and anxiety, you know what I mean?
Well, you gotta be nice to yourself. This is your first time being alive.
What the hell?
I love that saying.
That's
it's so funny.
That's trippy.
Go easy on my guys. I mean, guys, it's my first time being alive. I love that. All right.
That's pretty good.
Cool. Well, that was a deep one. A lot of good stuff. I think I'm looking forward to the next time we talk about your slump, you know, a few months from now, where you're actually at in it. Is it over?
Is it over? I don't know.
But I think you're going to have a lot more great insight at that point, which is really cool.
Rock on. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks, guys.